Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock MBA Podcast. Today's episode is with Brian and Paul from Fame on Fire. You may remember them. I mentioned them in my episode about Screamo covers a year and a half ago or something like that. Along with Our Last Night, I would say that they are one of the two bands who has most successfully used covers as a way to build their career. I think that their big breakthrough was when they covered Adele quite a while ago, back in 2013 or 14 or something like that. But in this episode, we talk about kind of the relationship between covers and originals. To me, they're kind of competing things, but I'm not sure that that's true. That's one of the things we talk about in this episode. They kind of pushed back on that idea and I think had a pretty compelling argument there. And we also talk a lot about how much they draw from rap and pop, both in terms of their sound and how they write their music, but also just in how they think about music in general. Happy to hear that they are on board with a lot of what I have said about, you know, how rock bands should learn from the model that a lot of rappers are using, and also about how to just kind of break out of these, I don't know, I guess I would say rules that rock has imposed upon itself, how it's kind of become a weirdly rigid genre that's like oftentimes feels like you're obligated to follow the rules or the rock fans get mad, which is kind of strange given that the entire premise of rock and roll was the exact opposite of that. So we've kind of come full circle. And of course, we talk about one of my favorite topics, why Lil Pump is brilliant. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, then you're going to like this one. I would highly encourage listening to this if you make music of any kind. I think there's a lot to be learned here about how to make the music, but also how to market it and just kind of how to think about your band or music in general. So check this one out. But before I get into it, there's a few things that you can do to support the show and my channel if you are so inclined. Number one is you can share this episode on social media. It helps a lot. Number two is you can sign up for my email newsletter. This is something I started doing a couple months ago. I put out a ton of content. I know it can be hard for people to stay on top of all of it. So I send out an email every week with links to every video I put out on my main channel, on my second channel. If I do any interviews or other kind of press, I'll link to that too, as well as links to what I'm currently reading or watching or listening to. So if that sounds cool, you can do that at the show notes. And with that out of the way, let's do a little bit of Q&A before we get into this episode. From Jules Bean, hey Finn, I struggle with anxiety and playing / listening to music really helps me as an outlet. Do you listen to music to help with your mental health? Do you think there's a relationship between music and mental health in terms of coping mechanisms, etc.? Have a great day. Yes, I absolutely do, but I don't think that that relationship is always a positive one. I made a video about this, I don't know, probably 6 months ago or something, when Frankie from Amir made a statement that he took back all his lyrics because he felt like they were negative and that it wasn't helpful to his mental health to keep screaming about all this painful stuff all the time. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so to me, the core idea is that if we accept that music can have a positive effect on our mood and emotional state and mental health, we also have to accept that it can have a negative effect on those things, right? I mean, it would be crazy to think that something can only have a one-way effect on these things. And so I think it's very important to be honest with yourself of, like, is the music actually helping you feel better? Or are you maybe using it to, like, wallow in it? Because there's just a weird part of our brain that when you feel shitty, there's a part of your brain that like almost wants to like feel shittier in a way. And I think sometimes we kind of let ourselves do that. Like if you're sad and then you go listen to a bunch of sad music, is that actually making you feel better? And if it is, you know, by all means, go for it. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of the time it's not. It's just kind of perpetuating that feeling and giving into the part of our brain that wants to just wallow in it and make it worse. I am conscious of the effect that music has on my mental state, let's put it that way. And so sometimes, for example, I'll find myself listening to a bunch of heavy shit and I'm like, I think I need to switch it up, and I'll put on some like classical or some like Baroque or opera or something like that. And I just kind of instantly feel this wave of like calming, you know, a soothing, calming feeling come over me like, ah, man, I feel better. So, you know, I would say just be honest with yourself about whether this music is actually making you feel better. And also, you know, consider just coloring wildly outside the lines of what you usually listen to. Like, you know, I always joke about it. People be like, well, I listen to anything from Whitechapel to Carnifex to Suicide Silence. You know, my tastes are just all over the place. You know, ask yourself if, you know, maybe not necessarily even as something that you want to listen to, you know, because you like the music per se, but just try listening to something totally outside the boundaries of what you might listen to, just to see how it makes you feel. You know, listen to some country or some opera or some bluegrass or, you know, I don't know, something you normally wouldn't listen to, and just see how it makes you feel. I think you might be surprised at the effect that it has on you. And, you know, people have studied this. I don't know enough about it to have a meaningful perspective on like how this works or why or whatever. But, you know, I think it's, we all know that listening to like a certain kind of song can like make you want to go punch somebody in the face and, you know, scream at somebody. You know, you hear a certain song, like a breakdown or something that makes you want to kill someone. Well, that's, you know, that's okay if you want to feel that way. Like sometimes that can be fun, but, you know, just ask yourself, maybe you don't want to feel that way all the time. Maybe you shouldn't listen to music all the time that makes you want to kill somebody. Maybe it'd be a good idea to put on some opera one of these days and just enjoy the feeling of calmness that you may experience. Or maybe you don't. I don't know. The point is just that, you know, you have to be honest with yourself. I think that there may be some music that you like, and as much as you like it, it may not be having an entirely positive effect on your mental health. And I think it would be smart to recognize that and, you know, be willing to turn it off if, you know, if that's what you need to do to be in a better place. So I hope that is helpful. And let me know what you guys think about that. Let me know what you know, if there's a particular genre or artist or anything like that that you tried out as a way of like regulating your feelings, and if that worked for you. I'd be curious to see what you think. We are doing a little co-promotional swap with my good friend Ray Harkin's show, 100 Words or Less. So the object of this ad read is for you to go listen to his podcast, which I sincerely think is great. I've known him for a very long time. I've been on the show, and essentially it is an interview show where he sits down with people from independent culture, records the results of these conversations, and puts them out for you. Some of the people who have been on the show include Will Putney from Fit for an Autopsy and producer extraordinaire, Toby from Emery, Chadwick Johnson of 100th, Joe Taylor from Knuckle Puck, and many, many more. You get the idea. If you are into the bands that I talk about on my channel, then you're going to love the kind of stuff that Ray talks about. He is one of those genuinely nice, pleasant people that I have ever known. I really can't say enough good things about Ray. And he's been doing podcasts longer than pretty much anybody I know. So he's put a lot of time into this, and it's a good show. I think you should listen to it, which you can do at the link in the show notes. Or you can go to the podcast platform of your choice and search for 100 Words or Less, the podcast, with your host and my good friend, Ray Harkins. So check out the show, and hopefully you will like it as much as I do. And with that out of the way, let's get into the episode. Brian and Paul from Fame on Fire, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us, man. Yeah,
thanks.
Love what you're doing for the community.
Appreciate it. Well, I thank you for watching. So like I said a minute ago when I was talking, I don't know a ton about you guys, but I did mention you in a video. I don't know if you guys saw it maybe a year ago or something like that, about my Screamo covers video. You know, there's a million and one metalcore pop and rap covers out there, but I would say you and Our Last Night, to my knowledge, are the bands that have actually had the most success with that. And I see that you've released this album of originals, and so I thought it'd be interesting to just kind of talk about how those things work together, because when I did a Google search for Fame on Fire, literally the first question was, is Fame on Fire a cover band? So let's start there.
Yes, we did a lot of covers, but the original idea of Fame on Fire wasn't just to be a cover band. So the origin of it all is Fame on Fire came from complete accident, complete coincidence. It basically started out where our drummer, Alex Roman, was like, hey, I want to do a drum cover of Katy Perry's Unconditionally. I was living in Orlando at the time. I had a studio. And I was just like, okay, cool. So Blake came in. Blake was my roommate. And he's like, I'll write the drums for it, because Blake is great at doing that kind of stuff. So Blake just midis out the drums for it. And then he goes, oh, this would sound sick with guitar on it. So then he goes and he throws guitar on it. And then Alex comes back and he goes, yo, this would be so sick with a singer on it. And they're like, does anybody know a singer? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm not singing this shit. I'm not doing this.
What was your objection?
I didn't want to be in a band anymore. Long story short, I was in a band with Blake and Alex, and we had the singer who was a complete fucking nutcase, just off his rocker. And I was just like, I'm over the band shit. I mean, I was 21 and I'm like, I'm overdoing this. I just want to be a producer, an engineer, because I love doing this kind of stuff. And so I just didn't want to be in a band. And then they asked me if I could sing it because I was a choir kid and I had no idea how to rock sing or anything like that. I knew how to blend with other people. So like, can you sing this? And I said, no. And they're like, okay, well, so they, you know, they go around for a couple of days asking people to sing it. No one wants to do it. And then they come back and Blake just goes, Brian, please just sing this. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll give it a shot. And I did it. It came out really sick. We were all super stoked about it. Mixed it down. We shot a video and then completely forgot about it. And then a week later, we're starting to get like phone calls and stuff from random people, like tweets and stuff. And people are like, you guys are on the radio right now. And we're like, what? They're like, yeah, iHeartRadio, like you guys won like best cover or something like that. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? So we go out, we go and we look at the video and it's got like 60,000 plays, which at the time, 60,000 plays in 2013 for a rock cover was massive. I mean, like we've never seen success like that ever. And so right after that moment, we sat down the next morning, Blake and I, and we're just like, I guess we got to be in a band again, huh? And he's like, yep, we do. And he's like, all right, well, I've had this name for a long time. What about Fame on Fire? I'm like, works for me. Let's do it. So that's how it happened. It happened by coincidence and it worked. So we kept doing it. It gave us an audience. And, you know, the main goal was always to release our music to a massive audience, our original music to a massive audience. And so we were like, let's build this up. Let's do this thing. And then we started seeing money come in too, which was really cool. So the band started paying for itself. We had capital behind us. We were able to do all these sorts of things that we never thought we could do because we were making covers. And then we released an EP and now we just released an album. And one of the big things is a lot of people would say, are you guys just a cover band? Do you guys only just do covers? Or a lot of people will just write us off immediately and go, oh, they're just a cover band. They're nothing. We're not. And the covers that we do are fucking sick. So that's why the title track, or not the title track, the first track on the album is cover band. It's just poking fun at the gatekeepers, I guess.
Sure. You've been more or less a band for 7 or 8 years now. Why did it take so long to do an album?
It took a long time because we were just so occupied with our own lives and doing covers. So there was a weird time. So we didn't get serious until like, when did you join the band?
It was mid 2015, late 2015.
Yeah, late 2015, we decided to like pull our heads out of our asses and like start doing things seriously.
So you're just like putting out kind of one-off covers and stuff here and there?
Yeah, we would do like maybe one every 6 months, it seems like at first. And then I think it was 2018, we really like, or 2017. 2017, we were like, okay, we're gonna just make content and we're gonna make a name for ourselves. And so we just started putting out a cover a month. Whether it was a cover or an original. So we had this game plan. It's like cover, original. Because we have a few originals floating around there. And it was after we did our EP and stuff like that. You know, we just honestly weren't working as hard as we could have been working.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I know when I was 23, I definitely wasn't working as hard as I could have been or should have been.
Yeah, we were fucking around a lot. I also almost got kicked out of my own studio. Crazy times. But we were just fucking around.
Do you feel like in hindsight, you maybe didn't make the most of that opportunity?
No, I want to say it all had to happen in that way for us to be where we're at now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. I don't think our album would be as like, I don't think we would be as happy with our album if we did it earlier on, because we had a bunch of original ideas. We didn't understand who we were yet. We didn't understand the direction we wanted to go yet. So that's why like it took us so long to release an album, because we were honestly lost within what was going on in the music world, who we wanted to be in the music world and all that. But it's finally out. It did take a long time to come out, but we're already working on LP2 now. So,
well, so how has the reception to that been in comparison to the covers? You know, because you see this all the time of some band has, you know, a little bit of a viral cover and then they release the originals and, you know, people don't care. How did that work out for you guys?
I think it worked out pretty good. We got a lot of reception. We got a lot of love from radio, yeah. which really helped, especially in like the Midwest. They absolutely love us because a lot of people still listen to radio. A lot of people still listen to Octane.
Especially out there.
Yeah, especially out there.
I'm always shocked talking to people. Like, I haven't listened to the radio in at least 15 years. And I'm always surprised at how many people I talk to that mention, you know, that they do listen to the radio. It's really strange to me that this is where they discover new music, you know, and I'm not putting it down. I mean, everyone's, you know, everyone's got their own way of doing things. It's just been so long since that was the way that I discovered new music that it's just kind of hard for me to wrap my head around.
I mean, I feel the same way. Yeah. Like, I just go to Spotify and see what's going on there.
Right.
And if I don't like anything, I just go listen to Linkin Park.
You Linkin Park and Architects.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorites.
Only Doomsday.
Yeah. I guess the kind of question that I have, you know, and I talked to the guys in our last night about this, is like how you balance that. And there's an assumption in my mind that covers and originals are kind of competing interests, but I don't know if that's true. How do you think about the relationship between those two?
I don't think for us it really does at all, especially with the last album that we just did. I feel a lot of people, when they listen to the album, it kind of gives them that feeling that, like, they're listening to a cover. Does that make sense? Like, the same feeling they get when they listen to a cover, they get the same feeling that they do when they listen to the album.
It's interesting that you said that, because I was listening to some of them and I was like, are these covers? And I just don't know the song, which is a good thing, you know, because it's so consistent with your covers.
Yeah. And that was a big thing. I mean, we developed our sound by doing covers. We learned music by doing covers. So, I mean, it's only fitting that, you know, our melodies and the way that we write music is going to sound like our covers, yeah. I guess. Mm-hmm. I think it does translate well. There is a bit of some people do only love us for our covers, and that's fine. There's going to be those people, but there is the dedicated fan base that we've developed that love everything we do. Even the shit that I want to delete off the internet. Like, they love everything. And so it's honestly awesome. And at the same time, it wouldn't be as good as it is if it wasn't for us doing those years of covers.
Tell me what you think about this. I'm a big fan of pop and rap. And what I think a lot of people in the rock and metal kind of world don't appreciate is how fucking good the musicians in pop are. They are on another fucking level, and so are the songwriters. And I would imagine that, you know, like you said, developing your sound from covering those songs, I would imagine that from, you know, kind of reworking those, you probably learn a lot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, we really learned how to make a good song. We really learned what it took. And, you know, I mean, like, we're always still learning. And not everything on the album is my favorite piece of work we've ever done. But we're learning more and more and more. Like, we know, like, for the next album that we're going to be doing, we know exactly the direction we want to go. You know, we want to incorporate a little bit more feel into it. So that's like the next time around. But yes.
Well, like, a friend of mine who's like the best musician I know, when I was trying to get better at songwriting, he said, well, pick some songs you like and take out a piece of paper and write down what's happening in the entire song, like on a, you know, measure by measure basis. And which is essentially, you know, that's part of what you're going to do when you rearrange a pop song for, you know, a metalcore band. And that made me literally 10 times better in like a week.
Yeah, because you understand exactly what's happening. You understand the technical side of what makes it so good.
Yeah, just all the little details, especially like with these pop songs, like the mixes are so intricate on a lot of them. One of my favorites is Anaconda. On headphones, dude, there's so much just intricate shit, like automation with panning and effects and stuff like that. That mix is a fucking masterpiece.
To listen to that on repeat because I was so like dumbfounded by that mix.
Yeah, and you know, what's brilliant about it is the average listener will not notice that. You know, that's why it's so good, is because they're not beating you over the head with it. But there's always dynamics in the song. Or TJF by Katy Perry is another one. Or no, sorry, California Girls. That has the same loop, like a fucking 2-bar loop the entire song, but it doesn't feel like it because they're always doing something else with the arrangement that makes it feel like something new is happening.
Yeah. I mean, like, we could talk about like mixing and arrangement all fucking day because him and I are both mixing engineers.
But I think that's like, you know, aside from just, you know, nerding out on those details, I think that's something that a lot of rock bands really could learn from pop.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot to learn from pop. I think rock bands are so far behind right now. I think they're just dying left and right. I mean, like, everyone's getting canceled. at the same time.
That's true too.
Like, who knows who's going to make it out of this whole quarantine?
My wife was making a video about like some, you know, some of her favorite old scene bands, and like she did 10 or 12 or something, and there were like 7 of them that had been canceled. We're like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's a tough time. Just don't be an asshole and you will get canceled.
It's kind of true. So are you guys fans of pop and rap, or is this just, you know, like something you do because you know it works, or what do you actually listen to?
Kid Laroi on repeat.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are fans. I like actually.
So we've both worked with a lot of rappers before. We owned a studio together. So we had like Lil Pump came in there, who Smoke Perp.
Okay.
Riff Raff was such a dick.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Friend of mine who's like the nicest person I know, the only person that he's like, I fucking hate that guy, is Riff Raff, because they used to live together for a little while.
Yeah, he's just an asshole. Like, no way around it. But yeah, so we have our roots like in the South Florida rap scene. So
got
it. The come up of it. We watched the come up of Lil Pump.
Yeah.
We watched him walk into the studio. I think I tracked him.
Yeah.
And just do an entire song in 15 minutes off Xanax.
That like 2012 to like 2017, like Florida rap scene was fucking incredible.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh yeah. So we have like hands in a lot of that. You know, the studio we were at was like a well-known studio for that. We got rid of it though, because it wasn't working out. But
yeah.
So yes, we are fans of rap, and it definitely influences how we work our music, how we write our music, how we think about music. Because it's simple and it's also genius at the same time.
I think Lil Pump is one of the best fucking songwriters of like this generation. And people laugh saying that, but it's true. Like Gucci Gang is a fucking masterpiece.
I think lyrically he's just so intelligent, but at the same time, I don't think he understands his intelligence. It's the strangest thing.
I think he's like one of those natural athletes that just walks on the team and smokes everybody.
That's literally what it is.
Yeah, so like he's really weird. Like he'll be like in the studio and like not be on any drugs and just be like a little kid. Now this is like take it when he was like 16, 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like just a normal kid, but the moment he takes drugs he becomes like this unnatural like human being, and just he freestyles everything.
Wow.
He doesn't write songs. He just spits out what comes.
Do you know the song Trapper of the Century?
Sure, I do.
It's Trapper of the Century, Obama, Obama, Obama.
Oh, that's when we tracked.
Yeah.
Oh, you tracked that. God, that is my favorite song of his, because it's like I'm completely unsure how much of it is a joke and how much of it is serious. I don't know if he knows.
I couldn't even tell you. Dude, yeah. I'm literally, okay, so I'm in the room. This was when we had like not our expansion, but like it was just a small studio room. And I literally look at his producer. I'm like, is he serious? I'm like, this kid's going nowhere. Fuck did I know. That's when I stopped trying to understand the music industry.
But I think that there's something to that, that like style of rap is every fucking line is a hook. It reminds me of Lil Jon.
Yeah.
You can chant along. It's like, you know, like those football, like, you know, in Europe, they like chant at like the soccer games, you know. It reminds me of that. You can just like chant along to every line of that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. And I just didn't get it back then. I mean, like, I get it now. I mean, I think Esqueda is like, I love that song.
Yeah.
My favorite Lil Pump song is Drug Addicts, which is not one of his most popular ones, but that's my favorite.
I mean, like, his lyrics just come from somewhere else, man. His comes from somewhere else. Not thought out. It's literally just given to him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, it's like when people talk about being a conduit from God, you know, maybe that's what Lil Pump is.
Yeah. Yes. Lil Pump's a conduit from God. That's great.
But I seriously think, like, I reference this all the time when, you know, I do, like, reviews of music for my patrons. And one of the things that I tell them very commonly is they'll have, like, a song that takes 40 seconds to really get started. And it's like, dude.
Nope.
In the TikTok era, you got to get into the hook in literally 2 seconds. Not on every song, but, like, they need to get into that mindset of assuming that you have someone's attention for maybe 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's so weird. I think that's a big problem within like rock music right now too, is people will literally, they're not taking themselves out of rock. They're almost diving deeper in. They're like doubling down on rock. And it's like, how much farther can you actually go in this genre? Like you have to expand your horizons, honestly.
And why would you, to me, it's just creatively limiting. Like, why would you not want to?
Yeah, honestly, like I don't understand it. I've heard some things though. about some bands where I'm like, oh, that's really sick. And also there's some cool things with like what Code Orange is doing. I know about their future plans and I think it's going to work out for them. So taking themselves out of that scene and expanding their minds and their music more.
I'm excited. I just did a podcast. You know, Jairus Johnson?
I'm not familiar.
He had a TikTok song with that like banjo beat blow up. He just did a remix with Papa Roach like a couple days ago. They remade Last Resort with him. I call his style butt trap because it's like it's like trap meets butt rock, and it's fucking awesome.
Is it really? I'm going to check it out.
He's amazing. And he's one of these people that can just spit out like some super good top line in 45 seconds because he's written 1,000 of them.
Yeah. I think that's another thing is just people like we were talking about the songwriting and like, you know, technically understanding it. I think music is now so much more about feel than about understanding the technicalities of it.
So people don't understand about mumble rap, like you can't even hear what they're saying, which first of all is funny coming from metal fans.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't understand your death metal, your favorite death metal. Right. I literally no idea what the fuck he's saying.
They can't compare to the lyrical majesty of Cannibal Corpse, you know, fucked with a knife. But you're totally right. It's like they have this very strange, like rigid conception of music where it's like a spreadsheet, but it's not. People only care about how the song makes them feel. Mm-hmm. And Gucci Gang makes you want to get wasted and go party all night. And that's a good feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
For most people anyway.
Yes, yes. It's just not overthought. The overthinking of music is kind of dead.
Or someone like Lil Baby, you can't understand a fucking word he says, but the songs are cool. I just want to turn it up in the car.
It's all feel. Like, and that's what all these new artists are doing is just feel. And the people that are just overly thinking things are really just getting left behind.
So the reason I asked if you guys were fans of that stuff is because I noticed you picked songs that, you know, it's not like they're obscure necessarily, but, you know, the average metalcore band wanting to do a cover wouldn't pick Lil Tecca.
Yeah.
You know, or Roxanne or something. So these are a little bit, I mean, those are huge songs, but, you know, among metalcore, they probably wouldn't know those necessarily.
It's too far out of their like bounds.
Yeah, it's not Britney Spears.
Yeah, they limit themselves. Like, you know, it's a challenge, but you know, it's always a good time. It's also a fact if like I can actually perform it or not. The hardest fucking songs are honestly the pop songs.
I'm sure. I mean, you guys did that Ariana Grande cover. That's,
oh fuck that song.
It's a high bar to clear. I don't think people understand how fucking good those like pop singers are.
No, that's like who, like literally like doing vocal runs is like a guitar solo. Like who actually cares?
Right.
Like no one cares that you can do that, Ariana. Just stop trying.
Well, I am a huge fan. So those are fighting words to me. You keep her name out of your mouth.
I love her. And if I was dating her, you know, I would leave my girlfriend a heartbeat for her. But if I was dating her, I'd be like, baby, nobody cares. I love you.
Well, I think it works for her. But again, you know, her big stuff is stuff like Seven Rings. You know, that's what people want to hear.
Yeah, no, Seven Rings is sick. Like, she makes some dope shit. I love what she does. But that fucking song, that run on Side to Side was so difficult. I had to change it.
I didn't actually listen closely to it. Did you do the dick bicycle part?
So it was featuring our friend Eric Dunn, and he's hilarious, like absolutely hilarious. He was an old school Viner and blew up on Vine. I don't remember if he said I think he said like something like she ride dick bicycle or something like that.
Okay.
So we changed the lyrics around, made it a parody, made the music video exceptionally weird. If you ever want to see some really weird shit, just go watch that video.
Some early Fame on Fire.
Well, I mean, if you left that line out of the song, that would be an injustice.
Yeah. I mean, the fucking bridge of that song sounds like a Disturbed song.
I'll have to give it another listen. There's people who, you know, freak out about someone like Johnny Craig, who I think is a very good vocalist, but like, that's like literally the base level of vocal ability in any, you could go to any like local R&B talent show and there's like 15 people that can sing that well.
There's two types of singers, in my opinion, the technical singers, and then there's the singers that are just emotional.
Yeah.
I'm not a technical singer. I'm not going to try and be a technical singer. I don't care to be a technical singer. So I'm out on that category.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can be technical and be emotional, but
I would say Johnny does both.
Yes, he does. He does. But that's kind of it. There's just those two types of singers, and you can either be a little bit of both. You can be 100% one side or 100% the other side.
I just find it interesting that in rock, like, they think of themselves as like the pinnacle of technical ability. And it's like, dude, the singers kind of suck.
Oh, there's no good rock singers right now.
Well, yeah,
there's no good, but like
there's a couple.
There's a few, but I mean, like, out of like newer like bands that are still like relevant that aren't like, I'm not talking about like Avenged Sevenfold or like just
right
like that. Like they don't count anymore. They're past their time. But like Ollie Sykes, I feel like just learned how to sing.
Yep.
Which I love their new stuff. I think it's fantastic. But the singer from Architects, he's fantastic. Like that dude has like insane fucking control.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't even know who else.
Tillian's pretty good.
Yeah.
Tillian is pretty good, but it's not my cup of tea though.
And I mean, and that band's like 12, 13, 14 years old too.
Yeah. It's so weird. There is like the tonality that really matters too.
Yeah. And I would say the same is true for like bassists and drummers too. You know, I used to watch all these like church drummer videos and stuff all the time, you know, and those like the bassists and all those bands too are just on another fucking level. Those guys are just God tier compared to almost anybody in rock. So if anyone's listening and you're wondering why I'm such a huge fan of pop and rap, it's partly because I just really like the songs. But I think if you haven't listened to that stuff and, you know, really given it an honest listen from just a purely like technical musicianship level, you're missing out.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, like I back in the 2012 to 2014 days, 2015 even, all I listened to was pop music. Because their mixes are fantastic, their songwriting is fantastic, the whole nine, like it was everything. Like around the like Katy Perry Dark Horse days, what is his name? Ryan Tenner.
Yeah.
So like.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Shooting Stars, whatever the name of the song is, like you know those days, Pompeii was a massive song. So like around those days, like I was really listening to pop, a lot of it.
That was a great time for pop. I was real into that stuff too.
Pop's so weird these days though. It's like the weirdest thing these days.
Exactly. That's the thing, is like pop now is so just strange and experimental.
Like Billie Eilish. Yeah. So she's considered pop now. But she's like a dark pop, almost anti-pop. It's so weird, but like it's great at the same time. It's like everything's just gone into total chaos and there's absolutely no rules anymore.
Exactly. It's awesome. I mean, that's partly why I like, same is true of rap. I know, like to me, when Fetty Wap came out, that was when I was like, oh, this is getting interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Fetty Wap, Future.
Yeah.
What was his name? The guy that made Panda?
Designer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when things started getting really good.
Yeah. So yeah, pop music. I feel like the pop music nowadays is K-pop.
Yes.
And American pop is now like this darker, more urban feeling stuff.
Yeah, and that K-pop stuff to me, I've tried many times to get into K-pop.
Don't even go there.
I first tried to listen to it in like 2010 when like Girls' Generation was big. And I was like, this sounds like some Jive Records bullshit from 2001. You know?
Yo, those fans. Holy shit. I don't understand the fans. I don't want to really get into K-pop because it's like, it's just a trap.
I get it. My wife used to like K-pop a lot. I've been to Korea several times. I get it. I just don't like the songs. But, you know, the thing to understand is that K-pop is not about the songs. It's about, you know, being a fan.
Yeah. It's also about like the image. And also, I feel like the whole way they really go about it is a little fucked up.
It is.
But I don't know. I don't know too much about it, but I've heard things. It sounds pretty fucked up.
Well, I mean, if you look at the life outcomes for a lot of those artists in the past 5 years or so, that'll tell you everything you need to know. There's several of them that have like killed themselves. And you know what I mean? In Asia, to do that is an even more drastic thing than it is here.
Yeah, it sounds like a real like loss of identity, like never having an identity almost.
I think it's kind of like the old school, like Lou Pearlman kind of model where, you know, I don't think any of those people have equity. I think they're all just employees and, you know, they really don't have a lot of control over anything.
That's unfortunate.
I mean, that's my impression anyway. I might be wrong about that.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
So another thing I wanted to ask you is, like, what would your advice be for people who are considering doing covers as far as, like, is it even a good idea? If you do want to do it, what makes it stand out in terms of the song you pick, how you execute it? What would you say to somebody thinking about it?
Make it different. You have to make it so different than the original. That's why, like, even with us, I don't even like, they are covers, but like if we were an EDM artist, it'd be called a remix.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Because our covers are so different from the original, what it was. But you have to make it different. You have to make it edgy. You have to sell your image on the cover itself, which is a fucking hard thing to do.
What do you mean by that?
Like, you have to sell your look. You have to sell, like, your attitude. You have to sell your band. You have to sell yourself, really. People need to believe in what you're saying. You have to sell the song again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically directed towards singers, because that's pretty much all on them.
So can you explain that a little bit more? I think I see where you're headed with that, but I'd be curious if you could, like, break it down, like, specifically.
I don't really know how to break it down to you specifically, but just be like, if you're going to be in a rock band,
have an identity,
be a badass. Don't be afraid to tell your bass player to fuck himself. Be the ultimate version of yourself. Be who you are and be the ultimate version of that. And people will latch onto that every single time.
Tell me if this is where you're headed. What I see is that a lot of bands, it feels like they did a cover of this pop song just because they know the song is popular and they don't really like it or care about it or have any real passion for it. They're just like, oh, maybe we should do a cover of WAP, because maybe we'll get some views from that. And it just seems very kind of like phoned in. I don't feel a lot of passion there. Is that what you're talking about?
You have to love what you're doing. if you don't love it, it doesn't work. We've done how many covers now? Like maybe five covers.
30?
Well, more than that. I don't even know. We've done a lot of covers, but like maybe five of them, like we weren't really all into.
Well, there's even sometimes where like we'll say we'll do a cover and then we'll demo three different songs that we want to cover and then pick one of those songs just because one of them sounds a little bit more Fame on Fire than the other.
Yeah.
So like you have to love the song and it has to like fit your band's vibe as well.
Yeah.
Not like don't just do a cover to do a cover.
Yeah, that doesn't work. It genuinely doesn't work. And somehow like the fans and the audience, they see through the bullshit. They don't know that they see through the bullshit, but they feel that there's bullshit going on. People are not as stupid as you think they are. They're not as brain dead consumers as you think they are. So you have to love the fucking song. You have to sell the song. You have to sell your band and you have to make it different. Your band has to be different. Or even if fuck a band, just do it yourself. Be different.
Sure. Why not?
Take a rock song, like take a Bring Me the Horizon song and make it into a hip hop song.
Yeah.
Like you have to change it up. Like I think we've only covered like two actual rock songs. Three. We've covered three.
It seems like you guys put an equal amount of thought into the videos too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to go really hard on the videos. We don't anymore. It's
your infamous Lil Uzi Vert video, for example.
All those rappers, we record them.
Oh, that's how that happened.
Yeah. And like, so we're all like boys and we're all friends. And so like, I don't even remember whose idea it was, but someone's like, hey, you want me to get, they were called Damn Mafia. They're like, you want me to get Damn Mafia to be in the video? I'm like, sure, why not? And he's like, okay, I'll tell him to bring guns.
And they were all so excited to do
it. And they were all so excited. And so like, it was just like a party. I don't even know.
They're all airsoft replicas. Don't worry.
Yeah, yes. Airsoft guns only.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they all came there and we shot the video and it was just a great fucking time. And then Franz thought it was a great video and then stole it.
Well, I was wondering how that happened. My wife and I were watching that video and I was like, how the fuck did these kids get these guys to come in with the guns? So that makes sense.
Yeah, they wanted to do it and they all had the airsoft guns.
Right. So that must be how you ended up doing something with Lil Toe also.
Yeah, Lil Toe literally used to just come into the studio and sit there.
Hang out.
Yeah, he literally, before he was in even Lil Toe, but now he only, like, you'll only ever see him fully done up.
Okay, with his ski mask and everything?
Yeah, like, nobody, like, some people know who he is, we know who he is, but other people who haven't seen him, like, didn't know him, like, back 5 years ago, no idea who he is, because he's always in his ski mask or he's in his full-on fucking Toe costume.
I love how like seriously he takes the Toe.
He's a sick artist too. Like, you know, you want to talk about like a Little John kind of person, like that's who he reminds me of.
I like non-ironically love his shit. Like Wake Up, I fucking love that song.
Yeah.
That's like exactly the kind of music I like.
Blood on My Tims is my jam.
Yeah,
he is so good. It's like there's just something about that. It's like a throwback to that mid to late 2000s, like Florida, Georgia kind of sound that I think will just last. Like, I think that's a timeless sound that will never go out of style.
Yeah, it kind of is. Agree. I mean, I'm still a fan of Lil Jon, so.
He's great. Or do you know the producer Nitty?
I don't think I do.
I don't think so.
He did, you know, Young Jock, It's Going Down.
Yeah,
he did that in a couple Duro songs. Like, he's my favorite producer. Anything Nitty does, I am just a sucker for it. That like 2005 like Atlanta bounce kind of sound.
Oh yeah, that shit was heavy too.
Super heavy.
Like if you listen to the song like What You Gonna Do, like the little scrappy song.
Yes.
Dum 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 dum. Like it's so heavy.
That's why when I listen to A Mirror, it's like obvious to me what it is. You know what I mean?
There's definitely influence from that. There's got to be.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Frankie's been into rap forever. And it's not like the reason why it works on is because they're not trying to do like rap rock, which I fucking hate. Rap rock sounds awful 99% of the time to me.
Oh, I can roast some motherfuckers for that shit.
I want it to be good, but
it's just not. It
doesn't end up.
It's so tryhardy. It's not real.
Exactly. It's some rock band trying to like rap. And it's just like bad.
It's a rock band trying to sound like Linkin Park meets Slipknot, and it just doesn't work.
No, It just, it's not good. In my personal opinion, you know, if people enjoy making it and their fans like it, good for them. But in my personal opinion, 99% of the time, it just sounds awful. And, but Amir is, you know, not consciously, you know, I'm sure Frankie would hate it if you referred to it as rap rock. And I don't think it is. To me, it's just metal made by a guy who likes rap a lot.
Yeah. I feel the same way about Volumes, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Volumes is like that because they're like deep in with the Suicide Boys and all of that.
Yep.
So like that's natural to me. Like you listen to his name's Gus, the Screamer.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to like his flows and stuff like that. You're like, okay, this is like a rap flow. There's a hip hop.
You know, their dad is like a really famous like Latin producer.
Yeah, I think I did know that. And didn't someone in that band pass away recently?
Diego did. Yeah, Gus's brother. It's like maybe a year ago or something. Yeah, very, very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And you're totally right. Those guys are deep in the in kind of the rap world, and you can hear it. And it sounds so authentic when they do it.
Yeah. Like I said, people, the fans, they're smarter than you think they are. They mm-hmm. see through that bullshit.
Yeah. So no deathcore WAP covers for the views. Just don't do it.
I mean, like, hey, if you can pull it off, though, if you can pull off a cover of WAP, then go for it.
You know, to counter what I'm saying, if you think it's a terrible song, you could still do it knowing that you think it's a terrible song.
Wait, so I have a story about that, actually. We did a cover of Gucci Gang.
Uh-huh. The best song of the last decade.
Yes. I almost ripped off my guitar player's head. I almost ripped off Blake's head during the session, yelling at him. I'm in the vocal booth, literally fucking yelling at him. I'm like, this song is fucking stupid. It makes no fucking sense. I cannot rap. Like, this is not me. And he goes, shut the fuck up. Do whatever you want. I'm like, okay.
See, that's what Pump would do.
Yeah. And so then I sang it and it worked.
There you go.
Right. I'm gonna try. Yeah, I was so pissed.
I'm just gonna try singing it. Okay.
So what you're saying is you couldn't match Pump's flow.
No, I couldn't. I'm not a rapper. I'm not a rapper. I'm not gonna.
You got out rapped by Lil Pump.
I did. But I matched his flow when I sang it. I can sing rap.
You gotta have your own take on it. You've also did a song with Poor Stacy, who's somebody that's getting a lot of interest to me from rock fans. Can you talk about how that came about?
Yeah. So Poor Stacy was not Poor Stacy when we met him. He would just hang out at our studio, smoke cigarettes outside, and just look exceptionally menacing.
Is he from Florida?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know. I thought he was from New York or something for some reason.
Oh, Boca Raton.
Okay.
And so he would just hang outside the studio, and he would always come up and like talk to me about some things. He's a very talkative person. Because once you get to know him, he's very talkative. If you don't know him, he's just going to stare at you and you're going to think he's trying to kill you. But he's a really good dude, very talkative. But he would come up, he would talk to me, and I would kind of honestly blow him off because I was just busy trying to run a fucking studio.
And now that he's famous, you're like, hey, buddy, remember how I was a dick to you 4 years ago? Let's forget about that.
Well, no, he knows. But so we had a new engineer in at the studio at the time. His name was Trilogy. And I said... And Trilogy and him started getting along. And I was just like, and Trilogy's like, hey, do you mind if I just record him for free? He literally has no money, no nothing. And I was like, totally fine. You know, Paul said the same thing. He's like, totally fine. Do what you want. Just make sure there's no overlapping with studio time. He's like, awesome. So he would start recording songs in between other people's sessions. Like, he just kept doing it. He had like a weird management deal. He went by a different name back then. It was Lito Santana. So we were working on the album. This is back in 2017, late 17.
Yeah.
We were doing Headspace. So we had Headspace written, and he was just like in the hallway of the studio and he heard it. And he came up to me like after everyone left, and he's like, yo, do you mind if I like try to get on that song? I'm like, sure, I'm totally down. So he went in there, he tracked it with Trilogy, and it sounded sick, but he was literally nobody. Like, he had no following, no fans, no nothing. And I was like, I, you know, showed the boys, and I'm like, yo, this dude is so fucking sick. I've never heard him like sing before. I only heard him rap because he was trying to be a SoundCloud rapper, but he said mm-hmm. it, and it was so cool, so unique, so different. You know, it had the Juice WRLD vibes, but like a little edgier.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I really want him to be on this song. Like, I don't think anybody can do it better. So then we have management come around. They're like, well, you know, we want to attempt to get somebody on it that has a little bit more clout than he does, you know, to bring the band a little bit more to the forefront. And I was like, okay, fair. I'm like, I'm down to give other people a chance, but I just don't think anybody's going to do better. Well, there was like three or four other people that hit it. Nobody did better. So fast forward, he records at the studio, releases music on Spotify, gets signed to Taz Taylor in Internet Money with Nick Mira. Shit doesn't work out for him there because Taz Taylor's an asshole. But so then he signs a deal with 10K, who has Trippie Redd, Tekashi 6ix9ine.
That seems like such a strange place for him.
Well, it's working out for him. So then he starts like blowing up and like releasing more music. He released music with Internet Money and they started making more rocky, edgier stuff. He hit me up and he was like, yo, I need you to be my engineer. And I said, okay. And then our album was about to start releasing. I was like, okay, so I need to start engineering for Poor Stacey. You know, I want to get closer to him again. And I need your label to clear this song for us, because now we got to get clearance from a label. Pain in the ass, did all that, got the clearance from the label.
I would imagine getting clearance from those kind of labels in particular is probably not a lot of fun.
No, it's fucking terrible. It's a bunch of kids at summer camp.
Yeah, sounds about right. Who are also like high out of their minds.
But you know, they got stupid money and they're like, ah, whatever, yeah, whatever the fuck. It's Elliot Grange. So, you know, Lucien Grange's son. But so long story short, I engineer Stacey now.
like to this day.
Yeah, to this day. Just got back from LA with him actually. He's got some shit that's like totally different than before, because he has his Travis Barker stuff,
yeah,
and he's still gonna do that, but like he's looking to see what's next. And the kid's a total fucking rock star, like you don't like at all. He's got that attitude that MGK was talking about, where it's like your shoes look too comfortable.
Right,
he wears very uncomfortable shoes.
Well, it's interesting, you know, he is one of the people that for whatever reason rock fans are accepting. And I find it very interesting how of all the rap people who are, or I shouldn't even say rap people, but you know, all these people who kind of come from the rap side of things but are playing rock now, there's some of them that rock fans hate and some of them they love, and he is one that they love. And it's just so strange to me how they kind of pick that.
It's the same concept as rock to rap and rap to rock. It's because he loves rock music. It's because when he shows me songs and artists that he wants to sound like, it's a rock song.
So does Lil Lotus. And they hate him.
Then I don't know.
You know?
Maybe it just comes off more genuine from him.
I can't figure it out.
He just sells it.
Yeah, he does fucking sell it.
And he doesn't use auto-tune, at least not that I've heard.
Oh, do you want to see the sessions?
Well, I mean, as an effect.
No, we just use...
Rock fans really hate that.
Yeah, and that's something I'll never understand, because their favorite fucking band's auto-tuned.
Yeah, that's the funny thing to me. It's like, dude, do you have any fucking idea how fake metal records are?
Yeah.
Like every riff recorded two notes at a time.
Oh, yeah.
Not a single fucking real drum hit on the album.
Distorted EDM track.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing as a fucking EDM track.
Yeah, metal and rock fans are just so weird. I mean, like, I get it, because I used to be 15 at one time.
Yeah, but they're like 30.
Yeah, it's so weird. I mean, like, I've seen the comments on our videos before. They're like, you got too much auto-tune. It's like, bro, first off, I'm really good at using auto-tune, so it's not too much. They're hearing like reverb and chorus and like, oh, auto-tune, dude.
Right.
People have no fucking idea what they're talking about.
Everybody, Ariana Grande tunes her vocals.
Oh, yeah.
You would be stupid not to.
Yeah.
Like, why would you not? And if it existed, well, like, well, that, you know, Jimmy Page didn't need it. Well, he would have used it if they had it.
Well, they did something different back then.
What was that?
They used to stretch tape.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah.
Or like shrink it. Yeah,
exactly. And what's the difference?
There is no difference. It's just a lot more time. Like,
it's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, like, fuck that. Like, absolutely fuck that. I would also hate to be the guy that tunes Ariana Grande, because like, that's got to be rough on you.
Yeah.
Knowing that each note in that run has to be exactly what it should be.
And she probably did like, you know, four layers.
Yeah. I mean, like, I respect her though. She knows her shit. Like, I've seen like videos of her going through like Pro Tool sessions and like.
I saw the same thing. I was impressed.
Which I'm like, that's sick. That's really sick. Like, as an artist, you should know exactly what the fuck is going on in your music.
Yeah. She was talking about the arrangement and how many layers it had and how they were panned and stuff.
Yeah. Super attractive.
She she knows her craft. I respect it.
Yeah, she really does. But yeah, so accepting a Poor Stacey, I think it makes sense. I think he sells it well.
Yeah.
And auto-tune, he has a very good amount of auto-tune on, but it's also covered up by distortion.
It's tasteful.
Yeah. When they say, I don't like auto-tune, what they mean is I don't like auto-tune that I can hear as an effect.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
Because you can hear it all over a lot of those metal records, like when it's like the pitch, like, you know. It's like nobody can hold pitch that consistently.
My biggest thing is like, have people accepted the new Bring Me the Horizon? Their shit's auto-tuned like out of the ass, but it's intentional.
Right, right. Anytime I can almost see, I'm a Melodyne guy, but I can almost like see the Melodyne, you know, steps yeah. in my head when I listen to some of this stuff.
Well, we do both, Melodyne into Auto-Tune.
Oh, really? Yep. What for?
Because Melodyne helps you like get the notes where the note should be.
Uh-huh.
And then Auto-Tune just smooths it out a little bit. So
oh, interesting.
It's like you put the note exactly where it needs to be, and then Auto-Tune will just take the rest and smooth it out for you.
Oh, I'll have to ask about that. I don't know. I've never seen anybody do that.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something that sounds really good because I used to just do just Melodyne because I didn't believe in Auto-Tune. And then one day I was like, I'm going to stop being a fucking idiot. And I made my life so much easier instead of like correcting like the waveforms, how they needed yeah. to go. Mm-hmm. Just throw Auto-Tune on it. You're good.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I'll have to give that a shot. Well, I guess before I let you go, what is the future? I mean, it seems like I feel like this album was kind of a statement of, you know, kind of putting more of a stamp or planting more of a flag about originals. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but tell me about the future and kind of how you see that dynamic of originals and covers playing out going forward.
This album was, you know, a flag plant. It was about, hey, we can do originals. Here's a whole album of them. But going forward, I think we're going to stick to doing a lot of originals, trying to get, you know, on that game plan of just trying to release originals every few months because we want to get our music out there. We'll definitely hit a cover again. Like, no doubt about it. Like, there's a lot of people that keep asking us for covers. There just hasn't been a song that we're like, oh, we need to hit a cover of this.
Mm-hmm.
But moving forward, definitely originals. You know, the songwriting's going to get better. The music's going to get better. We're going to not fall into the trap of rock and roll
mm-hmm.
ever. It's just going to be good. There's going to be a lot of content coming from us.
Well, actually, I do have another question, speaking of which. So it looked to me from looking at your YouTube and stuff like you guys had been relatively quiet over the past year or so. And, you know, that it took you a while to make the album is kind of surprising to me now getting to know you guys better, knowing that, you know, it sounds like you guys are very capable at production and you understand rap and you know that there's these kids that make three fucking songs a day. It seems like you guys move slower than I would expect from people who understand this. What are your thoughts on that?
We're signed.
Got it.
Like, honestly,
yeah,
like we were moving so fast and then we signed a Hopeless and we had to slow things down because, you know, they have a way.
Explain that. I understand what you mean by that, but explain that for anybody. It's like, oh, was Hopeless getting in the way? Or like, you know, they're going to instantly think the label's the bad guy. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Hopeless isn't getting in the way. Honestly, out of all labels that are out there, I think Hopeless is the best label. Mm-hmm. Love them. They do a lot for us. They let us do what we want. But, you know, we got to be more meticulous with how we go about things. We want to almost suck the life out of every single song that we can.
Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of shit going on. You can't just throw a song into their pipeline whenever you want.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot going on, but they're also going to take every song that we release that's a big song and squeeze it to death. You know, right now we are working on more music videos for our YouTube channel because also, remember, we had to put all our music videos on the Hopeless channel. So you're not going to...
Right.
You're not going to see, like, you're going to see a little standstill on our channel.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
We're going to start releasing more music videos on our channel. You know, it's not new songs, but it's just to pump life into the songs that are already out on the album. And we also have some game plan for releasing new music, hopefully within the next couple months.
Got it.
Yes, it's because of a label that we did have this like drought where we really couldn't do a lot because they're like, you have to work on an album. And we're like, okay, we have nothing to release. Our album's not mixed, nothing like that. So we had to make an album and it got released through the Hopeless channel. And now we're getting back to releasing on our channel. You know, I think they will be cool with us releasing a song a month or a song every 2 months, whatever.
I mean, as long as it's driving streams, then they're going to be happy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think our relationship with Hopeless is very good. They let us do what we want. They let us make the kind of music we want.
I mean, they sign you knowing what they're getting, I would hope.
Yeah, we basically signed with them. We told them, just so you guys know, we already got a lot of shit figured out. We just need you guys for X, Y, and Z. And
yeah.
That's it. And they're like, totally cool.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Cool. Well, great talking to you guys. It's super fun. I'm excited to see what's next. Any parting words of wisdom before I let you go?
For you, keep roasting the rock fans until they understand your fucking attitude.
Yes.
I appreciate it because I obviously do get quite a bit of pushback on that. And sometimes I feel like, hey, am I being too hard on them? But it's tough love.
I literally, you need to write a book, like the Bible of a rock star.
Well, I don't know if I would be the person to write that book, but it's out there. Just go follow Lil Pump.
Yeah, like literally just copy Lil Pump. Say dumb shit. Like just do, like stop trying to be so mature about everything. Like, oh, this is how things have to go.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I could go on about that forever. Cool. Well, I appreciate the support and I appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to what's next.
Thank you for having us, Ben.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX, and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.